listening to a download from theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Number 399.
Hello and welcome back once again to the Outdoor Station. Well, here we are at number 399, one podcast away from 400. I've had a lot of feedback relating to the recent TGO Challenge series, and thanks to all of you who have commented. Apparently you like the more conversational, chatty style, which I took in part from the US Startup podcast, one which has been hitting the headlines and heralded as a commercial success in the new media world. Of course, number 398 found me in a bivvy bag once again, this time at Land's End, and that too seems to have hit a spot with people who like the ramblin' and a roamin' style of entertainment. One person who has enjoyed my work of late is William Goodrich in the US, a regular listener who downloads everything we do to listen to later while on his post round. He has gone so far to use the advertising and support page on the Outdoor Station website and has made a personal PayPal donation to support us. That is very much appreciated, William, and thank you. It reminds me also that I have yet still to reveal the results of the survey I did back at the beginning of the year. The delay has been for no other reason than lack of time. However, maybe number 400 would be an ideal way of rounding off the facts and figures which cover the last 10 years. Yes, 10 years of podcasting. That's an average of 40 podcasts a year, almost one a week. That's dedication for you. Now, looking at my stats before I came to record this, I can confirm the downloads up to today total 7,660,511 over this period, which is an average of 19,199 per podcast, or 63,837 downloads a month. To give that some perspective, that's more downloads per month than the equivalent circulation figures of Trail Magazine and The Great Outdoor Magazine put together. Like William, if you wish to support us or thank us for any of those 399 free podcasts, then please pop along to the outdoorstation.co.uk website and click on the top menu bar marked Advertising and Support. Any donation is gratefully received. And thanks again, William. In this podcast, recorded in July 2015, I am chatting with Alex Kashifi, who is a secondary school teacher. As the schools break up next week and his pupils and their parents head off to exotic locations for a holiday, Alex is using his time by setting off on a sponsored Land's End to John O'Groats trip, raising money for the Stroke Association. Something close to my heart. No pun intended. Nothing special about that, I might hear you say, even if he's doing it unsupported. Many have gone before him, of course, on foot and by bicycle. However, Alex is choosing to do this barefoot. Yes, barefoot. Ouch, I hear you say. Now, we all have different views on footwear, approach shoes and boots when hiking, running and backpacking. But what about going back to nature and going barefoot? Please do check out the outdoorstation.co.uk website, as it has all the links to this adventure, the route, the timings, etc. The Just Giving pages, the sponsors and the background facts. He sets off on July the 26th. So depending when you hear this, you may be somewhere en route to join him, give him some encouragement, or even a bed for the night. Backpacking Light and the Outdoor Station are supporting Alex as best we can. It is for a great cause, and it is certainly a unique, admirable way to spend his personal leisure time. So how on earth did all this begin?
it kind of started with just getting into long distance running, so ultra running. Last year, I've kind of dabbled with the idea of going on some adventure runs round, like doing the Welsh 3000 routes, going up to the lakes, doing the Bob Graham round over several days as opposed to rushing round in 24 hours. But I did a bit of a charity run last year where I repeatedly ran up the same hill. I ended up doing it 652 times in sort of 23 and a half hours, I think it was. But while I was doing that, I just thought to myself, this is ridiculous. You're not seeing anything. It's disorientating doing this. And the idea that actually I could run from one end of the country to the other and I'll be far more interested mentally than what I'm doing at the present moment sort of thing. And then it kind of went on, a couple of conversations, and someone said it would be impossible to do it without your shoes on. And that's where the barefoot thing suddenly came in. And, you know, when you're doing challenges like that, it's got to be for a good cause.
Okay, so tell me about the cause.
I'm raising money for the Strokes Association. I thought I'd set myself a fairly hefty target of £10,000. And it's purely because it sort of has a personal link with me. My mother had a stroke when I was younger, so I saw the effects it had on her. And my grandfather passed away after lots of little mini strokes, which sort of ended up with him being locked in and whatnot. And that was really recently. And it had quite a big impact on me because he was quite an important figure in my life in terms of what he did and how he supported me while I was growing up.
Just to flag it up to everybody, we are supporting you on this event. Both my parents died from stroke-related issues, and so therefore we think you're doing a great thing here to raise the money for the Stroke Association. But also, we're really curious that you're doing it certainly barefoot. There are numerous people, as obviously everybody's aware, has done Land's End to John O'Groats or vice versa, on foot or on push bike or any other means, but I've never heard of anybody doing it barefoot. So I'm curious to know, really, first of all, to let people know, are you doing it self-supported or do you have a support crew of some kind helping you?
It is pretty much self-supported. The only support I've got is just recently managed to organise it all. I've got people's addresses sort of along the length of the country, at main waypoints that I'm going through. And they've been nice enough to say, here's our address. If you need to post anything to us, then feel free. So I've kind of made up my own little aid stations along the country. But apart from that, unless someone randomly offers me some, you know, place to shower or, you know, something to eat, it is pretty much self-supported.
So you're carrying all your kit that you're camping with as you go.
Yep.
How about the practical things like food and water, which are the two main issues, I guess?
Water I'm going to grab along the way. Obviously, when I get to the Highlands, it's going to be a lot easier than when I'm down the south end, but I've kind of picked a route after doing some research where I am going through places where there are shops, and I specifically found a route where I think this guy called Andy Robinson, one of the Cicerone books, he's sort of linked up all the main trails in the country going from one end to the other. And he clearly mentions, you know, there's a shop here, shop at this location. And I've sort of planned my nutrition around that. So I'll just be buying it as I go along. Apart from the Tailwind nutrition, which I'll be carrying and picking up from addresses that I'm posting it to along the country.
So you literally are living off the land then from a food point of view?
Yeah, pretty much. It's what I find, which is why part of my training's been running and basically eating whatever I can find in a shop. So teaching my body to be a human dustbin, as it were, as opposed to being really specific with my nutrition.
Well, I certainly think once you get a week into this, you're going to be vacuuming up anything you can find, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I will be. I think someone mentioned I'd eat, I'd be happy with cardboard dipped in fat, which I think after a week or two, I'd happily eat anything like that.
It sounds like it'll do you a lot of good. Lard. I'll have a packet of lard, please.
It's full of energy. It's what you need.
And so the route then from the Cicerone book that you picked up, this is, I'm thinking about your feet, the practical side of it now. I was down at Land's End myself a week or so ago, and the first section, as far as I can see it, would all be on-road. How soon are you getting off-road, as it were, and how much percentage-wise is actually off-road?
I didn't really work out a percentage, but I do know it's approximately 177 miles of road, and everything else is off-road. Now, I've done a fair bit of training. Majority have been off-road, but I've sort of made sure that there's lots of man-made on road, gravel tracks amongst it, just so I can learn how to move on that sort of surface without doing myself damage or slowing down too much, which is going to be the other issue, not going fast enough to finish in my 6 week time limit.
What pace are we talking about here? What's your running pace going to be, and what's your average daily distance, do you think?
Well, the daily distance is going to be 35 miles. Pace-wise, I think averaging on the slowest, sort of hardest going day, I'm going to aim for sort of 3.5 miles an hour, which is really just a fast walk when you think about it. But at the same time, I'm not doing it to sort of get from A to B as fast as I can. It's kind of like it is my holiday, so I'm going to treat it that way. You know, I'm going to stop, I'm going to enjoy the views. If there's a particular viewpoint along the route that isn't actually on my route, but I have time, I'm going to scoot around to it and have a look at it, as opposed to, like most people do, get tunnel vision, get from A to B, go to sleep, wake up, repeat again. I think I'd sort of struggle mentally if I did that.
I was going to say, really, 35 miles is a fair distance each day to allow yourself some tourism activities.
Yeah, it's quick tourism. As an example, I sort of made up a route, didn't really plan it, went out the night before and sort of completely destroyed myself in a gym and doing some CrossFit stuff to the point that I felt shaky the next morning, got all the gear plus some extra, and just ran on a complete random route from Buxton to Hathersage, which was about 34 miles when I actually mapped it out afterwards. That took me, it was about 10 hours, but I stopped at a cafe along the way, popped into a pub and had a drink, stopped at a shop, bought myself some water, sorted out some food from the shop, stopped, took some photos at the top of Stanage Edge and Burbage Edge. Then I went to the pub at the end of it, had some food just before they basically stopped serving food, and then went 3 miles back up the hill where I could set up my tent. The running bit tends to be around 5 miles, 6 miles an hour, and that compensates for the fact that I'm having, you know, I'm stopping to have a look at stuff and take some photos, etc.
What about the foot maintenance? That's going to be the biggest question. We read the book Born to Run, I think it was last year or the year before, which was extolling the virtues of barefoot running or at least reducing the amount of protection between your feet and the ground, as it were, and getting back to nature. Have you sort of slowly introduced your feet and your body using the five fingers type shoes, slip-on shoes, or have you just gone straight for barefoot and then just slowly built it up?
I kind of slowly built it up. I've been running for nearly 3 years. So when I start doing my Land's End to John O'Groats attempt, that's going to be my sort of 3 year anniversary, if you like. And from the start, I sort of researched it because I'm a biologist. I'm into human evolution and human mechanics. And I knew that something couldn't be right because the running didn't feel quite right. And it just kind of put me onto barefoot running. So over the last, let's say, 3 years, I've gradually weaned myself off shoes, getting more and more minimal. Did try the five finger shoes, but I found on long runs they still created sore spots. And then one day I just went, you know, I just thought to myself during a run, what are you doing? If you're going to barefoot run, just barefoot run. There's none of the, you know, there's no halfway house. It's barefoot or it's not. So I took my shoes off and gradually built up the distance.
So if you're, you know, you've got biological experience and biomechanics, then tell us about the development you've noticed in your feet over this period of time where you actually took the shoes off finally and where you're now coming to ready to set off.
Well, the arch of my foot is far more developed. I've got quite a pronounced arch now. Even my family have noticed that I do have quite a good arch in my foot. My feet are wider than they used to be. My toes have started to spread out. They're not overlapping like you would expect someone who wears shoes would be. When you sort of put your foot on the ground, there's a definite flex that you can see. I think you could see it with anyone, really, but it seems to be more pronounced in my feet compared to what they used to be. And also, the soles of my feet, all the odd callousy sections that I used to have from shoes, they've all gone. And what I've got is kind of a leathery pad. It doesn't look anywhere what I was expecting it to do in terms of being really calloused and gnarly. It's actually quite smooth, which is quite nice, actually. I've got better feet than most people that I know.
I mean, this theory about if you don't have the right protection and right foot protection, you'll have collapsed arches seems to have been false then.
For me, you know, I mean, each person's sort of completely different, but in my head, the arch is there for a reason. When you see people, move or just walking around, you can see that arch flexing and absorbing some of the shock from putting your foot down on the ground. So for it to collapse, it seems counterintuitive once you take all that into consideration. I think what could happen is you will end up hurting the actual muscle that runs through your arch and damaging the tendons because you're overstressing it and it's not used to it. And the other thing that I found from research, I didn't really realize why it happened, but people who suffer from plantar fasciitis, they seem to suffer from it from landing flat-footed as opposed to landing more sort of towards the front of the foot and absorbing some of the shock and using it all as one big spring, as it were.
Well, as it happens, I had an injury a few years back on my fascia band, which is the band that goes across the arch of the foot and spreads out to the toes, for people that don't know. It came after an adventure race, as it happened, and I was running on the hills, and I happened to hit a sharp rock that hit me, caught me right in the middle of the arch. And it has taken probably best part of 2 years for it to heal enough for me to feel I could run again without it, you know, throbbing and the pain. So I'm curious to, I will be curious, obviously, when you get to the end of it, to see how your feet have developed and taken all the various punishment that you're going to give it. That's really interesting. So the you've got a sort of a leathery protection on your heel, but what about the toe section? Is that equally developed?
There's obviously the usual pad on the heel, but I've got the same pad that runs sort of on the forefoot, if you like, the ball of the foot under the big toe. Runs across at the same level underneath the smaller toes and then kind of extends out slightly to the outer edge where my arch would be. And then it starts again on the heel. But in looking at it, you can tell it's callous because of the colour difference in your skin. It's actually, I'd say, as developed as my heel is.
And is any particular surface giving you more problems or more pain than any particular other one, like cobblestones or tarmac or grit or anything like that? Or have you now developed enough that none of that really troubles you?
It depends on how much I'm concentrating. But I found if it's a natural gravel path, I mean, for example, I went up Goat Fell, just hiked up Goat Fell last week without my shoes on. That was fine because I know that the main path up it has been made using natural gravel that's developed around the actual fell itself. But as soon as I get onto a man-made surface where the gravel's man-made, those little gravel pieces are sharp and you really have to concentrate and change your gait. But it's kind of, I'm learning new things all the time. I'm learning that if it is gravelly and quite sharp gravel, if I move faster across it, seems to hurt less than if I try and walk across that same surface. So it's a case of managing my pace, managing where I, you know, the route I'm going through based on what I see ahead of me, and being sensible with it and stopping if I need to and having a bit of a giving my feet a little bit of a rest.
Have you noticed anything different when you put boots on now? Do you find that the boots feel like they're trapping your feet or trapping your ankle if you've put boots on, of course?
A little bit. I've never really worn walking boots. I tend to stick with my trail shoes. But I have noticed that if I wear my trail shoes for any prolonged period of time and I have to go for a bit of physio for my foot after I had to run a bit of the Felsman in shoes, the sort of fascia band that's across the top of your foot where the tendons from the toes run through, that becomes quite sore. And according to my physio, who just watched me moving with shoes and without shoes, when I wear shoes, I seem to be lifting my foot unnaturally, as it were. I'm actually using muscles to lift my foot as opposed to just letting it spring up. And that's causing the tendons to sort of get trapped inside the shoe and rubbing past it, which you actually get quite a huge lump. And that took about 2 weeks to really settle down so I could run without any actual pain in the back of my foot.
Podcasts are based solely around self-powered travel. If you walk, run, cycle, paddle, climb, explore, or sail, we want to share your adventure, hear your highs and lows, and inspire others to go out and do more.
Have you done several days worth of running without, you know, without shoes? So you've run a good distance and then repeated it the same the following day and so on, just to make sure that everything is working biomechanically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have done. Admittedly, more recently than early on. But for example, that trip to Hathersage and camping out, that was done without shoes. And then the day after, basically woke up and repeated it via a different route. So purposefully choosing routes that I wouldn't normally, and then finding out that actually, yeah, this is where the knowing that it's a man-made gravel path, I need to watch what I'm doing. Whereas going up places like Cavedale in the Peak District, I can go up Cavedale with no issues at all. But as soon as I turn onto a byway that's got gravel spread across it to sort of reduce the issues of erosion, that's where I start to have to really think and slow down.
Hmm. Interesting. Just from the tone of your voice, you're feeling very confident about this now.
Yeah, part of that's having to stay sort of positive and focused. But I have done, you know, I've done the training. I've noticed that sort of metabolically, my body seems to work a lot better. I'm recovering ridiculously quickly. Even if I sort of bruise a bit on my foot 3 or 4 days later, there's no actual sign of the bruise. There's no pain in my foot. I've learned quite a lot about how, you know, how to solve little problems like niggles in the side of the knee. You know, what do I do with that? Well, okay, if it is at the side outside of the knee, all I need to do is re-engage my glutes. So do some squats and whatnot mid-run if I have to. So I'm fairly confident I can do the 35 miles a day. The thing I'm a little bit concerned with is keeping that pace and being able to pick good routes if I need to, even though I've never really seen the route. So there's a lot of unknowns, and it's 35 days with 35 miles of pretty much terrain I've never been on.
I take it you've done a lot of research on Google Earth and followed the track through and stuff.
Yeah, I followed the track through, but sort of seeing it on a photograph and actually putting your feet on it, you know, the two different things. Nice thing is some kind supporters, some people who have sort of got involved and they're interested in on the progress. They've actually gone onto the tracks, taken photos and sent them me. And the photographs I've seen, they look like routes that are easily barefootable, as opposed to routes where you'd really, really struggle.
So you're wild camping as you go, I presume, unless you obviously get offered a bed for the night, which would be quite nice, I'm sure. But I expect if you do wild camp a lot, you'll suddenly find you can't sleep in a bed.
Yeah, I might do. I might find it too soft.
It does happen. I will warn you. And you're carrying all your equipment. Now, what have you got your equipment down to weight-wise and bag-wise?
I need to finalise the final weight because there's a few bits and bobs that I'm still tweaking with. Sort of last minute, well, actually, can I live without this? And yourselves were really kind enough to provide me with my main kit, really. So I've got the Vaude Lizard GUL, which, having tested it in some harsh weather, is just an incredible tent, even with the sort of, I'd say, unique design of not having a tent pole that goes all the way across the width of the tent. The titanium pocket stove, which is also another nice piece of kit. Really, really flat and small, so it's not taking up any space. And I like the fact I can burn pretty much anything on it. Little alcohol burner. And I think what I'm going to do is rely mostly on the alcohol burner until I run out of alcohol and need to buy more, and then switch to the pocket stove. I've got a generic two-season light sleeping bag. There's a Thermatex blanket. I have a old-fashioned piece of foam as my roll mat, which I've cut right down. Tested it last week for an entire week. And actually, even though it's only covering sort of my body from just below the top of my head to my knees, it was actually quite comfortable, and I think it was fairly adequate considering I was in, you know, I was on the Isle of Arran where the weather is a little bit unpredictable. I've obviously got a pair of emergency sandals because I'd like to finish the trip even if I damage my feet in some way. I'm going to have pair of running shorts plus spares, and carry 5 T-shirts, which I will just keep rotating through, making sure I've got some clean ones.
Right, all right. So if anybody with the washing machines en route, you might be appreciated in about a week's time.
I might do, although I'm not sure I'm going to dry them.
We just put them back on.
Yeah, I think I might do.
We've helped you out with the Vaude Girl tent, and it's pleasing to hear that you found it a fairly unique but interesting design. How are you finding the Thermartex blanket? It's a fairly unique product, but it really does make a difference, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. There was a couple of nights in Arran. I had it laid out inside the tent in case I needed to use it, so I wouldn't be messing around in the middle of the night. So all I needed to do was reach over, pull it over, sorted. And it did make a big difference because a couple of nights the temperature dropped. I think on one night dropped down to about 8 degrees because we had a patch of cold weather heading across and a bit of a rainstorm coming. And it made a difference between cold and not being able to sleep and actually warming right up and straight to sleep. And it's light, sort of 200 grams, which is the actual weight. I think it says 200 grams on the packaging, but I reweighed it just to be sure. For 200 grams, it's quite versatile. I think on nights where it's warm, you could probably even sleep with just that blanket and not have to worry about your sleeping bag coming out.
Well, the guy that's behind it, that's exactly how he tested it in the winter, with just sleeping outside in the blanket and nothing else.
Wow.
I haven't been brave enough to try that because usually I'm somewhere where if it doesn't work, then I'll still be pretty cold.
Yeah.
But it comes with a pretty good scientific backup. So I'm really pleased that works. And I hope it makes a big difference to obviously the success of the trip if it turns cold on you.
Well, yeah, I am going to, obviously I'm going to see how it goes. But depending on the weather, there's a huge temptation because I have obviously the ability to post stuff that I'm really not using back. So kind of have my kit evolve as I'm running along, as it were. If it is warm enough and the predicted weather looks good and it's supposed to stay warm enough, there's a big temptation for me to sort of try out on a couple of nights and then say, okay, sleeping bag not needed right now. Let's post it up to Scotland and pick it up when I get there and just make do as I am.
Well, that'll be interesting to see how that develops, certainly.
Yeah.
As you're self-funding this, and obviously eating off the land and buying stuff as you go, what sort of budget have you allowed yourself?
I've allowed myself £350 plus £50 of emergency.
Okay, and that's broken down to what, £10 a day roughly?
Roughly £10 a day, yeah. Majority of that is going to end up being sort of one main meal a day and also water. Which comes, obviously I've sat down and worked it out. Main meal is things like a pasty, something that's sort of low cost but high energy value, which is kind of how I'm going to have to survive. And the nice thing is that the majority of my calories are going to be supplied from the Tailwind Nutrition drink, who are also supporting me. So I don't have to worry too much about, you know, finding food repeatedly. It's just a case of, as I go past somewhere that has sausage roll, pork pie, something like that, grab one and then carry on.
Mm. And I suppose, see a place that sells pasta, it'll be pasta-based foods that you'll be eating if you have to cook and can manage to eat.
Yeah, it'll be anything easy to cook. I do tend to favour high-fat things because I've sort of spent 2 years just weaning myself off needing carbohydrates too much. So that it basically means, if I am desperate, as long as I get a tiny amount of sugar calories in just to keep metabolism going, my body pretty much relies on the fat I've got on my body. And there's quite a lot of it.
Well, there won't be by the time you get to the end.
Well, hopefully not. I might be able to see my six pack.
As long as they can't see through you, that's the main thing.
Yeah, indeed.
Now, what about support? You obviously you've got people along the way, hopefully, that's going to help you out in some way, give you a wash or a shower or a bed for the night or whatever. How are you keeping contact with people? How can people track you and see how you're getting on? Are you sort of updating a blog as you go? What are you doing on that score?
What I'm going to do is focus on updating the blog as I go along, because the blog is directly linked to the Facebook page, which is just a Barefoot Le Jog page. So if I put a blog post on there, it'll ping automatically across to the Facebook page. Race Drone have been kind enough to supply me with a GPS tracker, which, as long as obviously the technology works, it should update my location also to the Facebook page, sort of every now and again. So people will be able to keep a track of me throughout the day. If they're interested in see how much distance I've covered, whereabouts I am, they can go on the Race Drone website, and I'll be putting the actual link directly on the blog itself, which is Pursuing the Void. And also, I have a wonderful friend who's volunteered called Peter Ambrose, and he's going to basically take over doing things like Twitter posts and Facebook posts. So all I need to do is really send him a text message, which allows me to switch off my phone and conserve battery power while he then relays the message out.
I see your. I'm just looking at your adventure gear list on the Pursuing the Void website. And you've got an iPhone 6 there and a couple of rechargeable units. How do you plan to recharge those?
One of the rechargeable units, the lower battery capacity, is it's solar powered. And according to the instructions, I've tested it, and it is about accurate, but about 8 to 12 hours of sunlight recharges that battery. So that's sort of my emergency backup. The other one gives me around two or three phone charges, depending on what I'm doing with my phone, because it's quite a powerful battery. But I will be, I quite like the idea of thieving electricity from wherever I can. So I'll be basically relying on other people, popping in the pub if they have a plug, just being kind of, going up to them and saying, would you mind me using a plug? I don't mind paying for a tiny bit of electricity. Just basically charging it as I can and where I can along the way and just managing it that way.
On the subject of calling in and going to the shops and the pub and whoever, wherever you call into en route, what have you found so far as a way of simply explaining what you're doing to people? Because presumably most people would be really shocked once they take a second look at what you're wearing on your feet.
Yeah, I think some people have offered me shoes while I've been training, which was an interesting few moments. I'm just basically going to say that, the shoe side is to find out if it's possible. But the whole idea is to, one, raise awareness of the fact that Stroke Association exists, and they do quite a lot of work to help people who are affected by strokes in any way, and that I'm raising money for them by, through what I'm doing. I have got a little flag type piece of material, which basically says, this is what I'm doing. This is where you can donate if you want, or this is why I'm doing it, which I'm going to strap to the back of my pack. So if I pass anyone and they turn around looking at me in disbelief, hopefully they'll see the back of my pack as opposed to stare at my feet and be able to, donate, hopefully.
Mm. Well, one thing you might find, just from speaking to people who have done charity events like this, is that you might suddenly find people suddenly hand you money. So just make sure you've got somewhere to put that.
My plan was to get that all in, and when I find a bank, just sort of sticking it into my account and then sending a payment across to Just Giving website, so it's sort of out and accounted for, as it were.
Mm. Mm. Finding a bank where you're going might be interesting.
Yeah, especially in the Highlands.
yeah, absolutely. So tell me about the people who are sponsoring you then. There's Backpacking Light, ourselves. Yep. Who else are involved?
There's Race Drone, a gentleman called Richard Weremiuk. I hope I pronounced that right. He's he basically organises and runs ultramarathons, but on the back of that, he's developed his own tracking system, which he's tried at his own races, and he's got an iPhone app to go, or a mobile phone app to go with it, along with these small GPS trackers. He's been kind enough to basically give me one of these trackers at next to no cost at all. It's usually they're quite expensive. There's also Tailwind Nutrition, a guy called Mike, who set up the UK side of Tailwind Nutrition. He's got a similar sort of background in terms of he has himself had a stroke. He had to come through from being a triathlete and an Ironman veteran to not being able to run, relearning how to run. And I contacted Tailwind in the US just to say, where can I buy your product from? Because I'm interested in using it for this little project I've got. I'm assuming they forwarded my details to him. He then looked me up and got in touch, which is, I think, yourselves and Mike at Tailwind have had sort of like the biggest uplift of this challenge, because without that nutrition, I think that the food side of things would be a little bit of a nightmare. And without the equipment you guys have supplied, the pack weight is going to would have been sort of 7, nearly 8 kilos. Whereas with the equipment I've got now, it's dropped to, I think last track, it was around between 5 and 6 kilos, depending on what I carry and whether I cut it right down or not.
The home of UK-based audio and video podcasts for lovers of the great outdoors everywhere. If you have any feedback, questions or suggestions, why not drop us a line directly to our email address, info@theoutdoorstation.co.uk.
So I know you're being positive and you are focusing on it being successful. What, if anything, are you a little concerned about?
One is running out of time. Because I know the distance is doable, whether shoes or no shoes. I also know that a team of sort of elite fell runners did it completely unsupported, sort of mountain marathon style. And they took 6 weeks and 3 days. Now, I'm going to attempt to do a similar route, albeit 50 miles shorter. And I'm going to try and do it in 5 weeks to 6 weeks max. So the time thing is worrying me more than anything else. I think everything else, it's a case of just keeping an open mind and making sure I'm ready to solve problems if a problem occurs and planning ahead. So I've made notes on the route as an example. So I know where there's sections where there's no shops, and I know roughly how much food I'm going to need to buy where there is the last shop, or how much water to buy additionally. So I think that and the midges in Scotland.
Mm. And do you have an Avon rep near you?
We do. I've tried Skin So Soft.
Yeah, how'd you get on with it?
Well, I sprayed one arm with Skin So Soft, left the other one bare. I still got some bites on the Skin So Soft arm. Obviously nowhere near as many. But I tried Smidge,
yes,
which I bought in Arran. Smidge works better than Avon Skin So Soft. So I do have a couple of bottles of that, which I'll be taking with me. And if I see anywhere that sells it and I'm running low, I'll be buying it straight away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I saw it when we were over in Scotland, up in Scotland in May. And a lot of people were saying, a lot of the locals were saying, it really is the new thing to help with that particular frustration.
Yeah, it did seem to work. I tried one night without, ended up with a couple of bites on my way into the tent. Nothing once I was in the tent, which was nice. So they're obviously not able to get in. And then repeated the same test the night after, wearing Smidge. And the only place they managed to, or they were tempted to bite me, was on my feet, which I didn't spray.
Right, right.
It seemed to work really, really well.
Mm. Well, you're setting off, I don't think we've actually mentioned when you're setting off. You're setting off on the 26th of July, 2015, aiming to finish on the 28th of August. So you are hopefully doing it during the better months, but let's hope it's not too good, because I suppose the last thing you want is really blistering heat for several days. That would be the opposite end of the scale, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah. I'm going to have to be really careful with how much time I actually spend in the real sort of hot moments of the day, sort of around lunchtime. The other plan I did have was to find some sort of sheltered little spots when it's the really hot parts of the day. Just have a bit of a sort of Spanish style siesta and just go to sleep for a couple of hours and then run later on into the night, as opposed to running through the day and then suffering from the issues of heat exhaustion.
Well, I did wonder, with the timescale you set yourself and the distance, that the idea of being able to do a little bit of tourism may be the furthest thing from your mind, because I should imagine the first week or two, until you get into a pace which you know you're confident about, You're not going to want to distract yourself with either wasting energy or wasting time by wandering to look at certain sites. I realise it's your holiday period because you're a teacher. I can imagine that the desire to achieve the goal will beat the desire to look at the view.
Yeah, it will be. It will do to a point. I've not got the sort of racing mentality, as it were. So as an example, I think I mentioned tunnel vision earlier on. A book I've read recently sort of puts running into two basic areas, or moving around into two basic areas. The tunnel vision area, where you're pushing really, really hard and you're really not aware of your surroundings. You're just focusing on the end goal. And the sort of the more slower running, where you're aware of your periphery, you can kind of see the whole surroundings and you're enjoying being there, as it were. I've got to really focus on staying in that enjoying zone at the same time as focusing on just tracking the distance. So I think what I will do is, first couple of weeks, possibly pause to take a photograph of the, you know, take a photograph of the lovely scenery, maybe do a couple of videos, because I am carrying a camera with me, which is a high-quality camera as opposed to sort of a smaller pocket camera. And the plan is that hopefully the video footage I get, I'll be able to make some sort of little mini documentary, which obviously, again, will drive a few more people to sort of be aware of what I did and become more aware of sort of stroke awareness, as it were.
If people look at your blog site, Pursuing the Void, they can see the intended, or an outline of the intended route day by day. I should imagine a lot of people, if they hear this, they might wish to be on that route at some stage to give you some sort of moral support or food or whatever it might be. How much advance notice, how much detail will people be able to see exactly which route you're taking in a particular day? Obviously, you're recording where you've been. But if somebody wanted to say, okay, well, I'll meet you at that point because I think it's going to be a bit of a tough one, how can people do that?
That's a good question. I think what I'll be doing is, depending on the terrain, telling Peter roughly what time I'll be in different places, and then posting that saying, you know, at this time I'm going to be at Wadebridge. But it is going to end up being on a sort of roughly day-to-day basis. And especially the first 2 weeks, it's going to be really hit and miss, because it's going to be the settling in period, if that makes sense. It'll be the extra 2 weeks of training, which I can't do because I have a full-time job where I'm running every single day, 35 miles a day. But it'd be a case of basically notifying people on Facebook, Twitter, and then hoping that if people want to join me, they can.
And would you like people to join you?
I don't mind at all. I quite like the idea of it being just one huge adventure, and, you know, meeting new people, having a conversation with them, finding out why they run. So far, I've met quite a few people, and the nature of running slightly longer distance races is, if, unless you're at the front of the pack, even at the front of the pack, actually, you tend to have conversations with people. Why are you doing it? And, you know, what do you want to achieve when you got to the end? Have you got a time? How long have you been training? What sort of food do you like? So it's conversations seem to pop out of running, or while you're running slightly slower. So I'm hoping I meet some people that are interesting. Otherwise, it's just going to be landscape after landscape after landscape.
Yeah, well, yeah, which will still be enjoyable, of course, if that were to be. But I can't imagine this will be, you'll be on your own for too much. Talking of which, I mean, have you had, apart from ourselves, obviously, other media interests, people interested either coming with you or joining you somewhere or interviewing you afterwards?
There's a few of the clubs who have been, the running clubs who have been really interested in running along with me and joining up. Some people at the Goyt Valley Striders, which are kind of local to Buxton, planning some sort of picnic come small 5K race when I head, basically when I reach Bakewell, the Bakewell area. And they call it the Barefoot Picnic, where everyone wears bear's feet, as a pun, as opposed to actually being barefooted. Trail Running Magazine are going to be basically following my progress. The editor of Trail Running Magazine has said that, you know, they're going to do a catch-up with me afterwards, because she was nice enough to see me at a race and decide that actually it's something she'd like to, you know, have a sort of a full-on story of on, as opposed to just a small little section in the magazine. I've approached a couple of places. Summit, I believe they're called Summit Fever Videos, who do a lot of ultra running videos. They're interested in the footage, and hopefully they'll be able to take it on and make some kind of documentary about the whole thing about it.
Well, I admire you, because it is a bit of a task to do something like this and then video it from a point of view of trying to make a documentary from it. You suddenly realise where all the time goes, and at the back of your mind, you're starting to panic about covering the miles. We record normal clips when we're doing something like the 200-mile walk we've just done across Scotland, and it takes a fair amount of time, even just 10 seconds here, 10 seconds there. It does take a fair amount of time. So as much as I'm sure we would love to see that, do keep in mind you don't want to let it run away with you.
Yeah, I will be. The other thing is that after sort of day one and two, I think I'm not going to have very much to say apart from I was running yesterday.
Hey, guess what I'm doing today?
Yeah, I did think as an amusing set of Twitter tweets, just put, yes, I'm running again today. And do you want to guess what I'm doing today, sort of thing? Just making fun of myself, as it were.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot of people will be interested and keen and pleased to hear that you are running every day and that you've got no injuries. But yes, I can understand that after the first couple of weeks, the novelty might wear off a bit.
Yeah.
Well, I hope to, if I can, if the timing's right, as you come up off as Dyke Way, join you myself at some stage, whether for a bit of a jog or a bit of camp or something, just to catch up with you with the story. And obviously we'd like to have a chat with you when you get to the end and see how it all went.
That would be really good, actually. I think it would be interesting for you to sort of see me parlay through as well as at the end, I think. And it's going to be interesting to see my mindset from someone else's point of view. I'm toying with the idea of carrying a little journal, and then at the end of each night, just writing a few words about, you know, what's actually been going through my head, as it were, and seeing what comes out of that as well.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things is which song gets stuck in your head for 30 odd days.
I think I already know what songs they are.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they seem to always come up. Kylie Minogue's Can't Get You Out of My Head, which is quite apt. Beyonce, I think, I can't remember what it's called, but it's something to do with putting a ring on it.
All right.
That seems to pop into my head. And I do like to be beside the seaside. And the Antiques Roadshow.
Right. Well, you've certainly got a wide, varied, eclectic musical taste there. Are you taking an MP3 player in Massive Interest?
I don't think I am, because it's one extra device to charge.
Mm.
And I think once I've had like a couple of days of running, that MP3 player is going to be gone. And a lot of the time, I don't actually run with music. I tend to just run and just let my mind sort of drift, so that I'm more aware of what's going on around me, including, you know, the sound of my footsteps, because that's a big giveaway. As to you putting your foot down too heavily, you need to lay off a little bit, or you're overreaching, you're going to end up with a sore spot, and that's going to turn into a blister if you don't watch what you're doing.
Mm. Have you been tempted to use running poles at all?
I've tried. I'm not really coordinated enough, I don't think. I think they take a certain level of skill that you have to develop. And recently I watched someone doing the Bob Graham and supported her on sort of three legs of the Bob Graham round. And it could just be coincidental, but she, when she was tired especially, she moved better without the running poles than she did when she had the running poles. And personally, I tend to prefer to have my hands free. So if I need to crawl, I can get my hands on the floor and I'm happy enough to crawl up a hill as opposed to try and run up it or walk up it. So it's interesting. I think it's just a personal thing. Until I try it and they click, in terms of the way I'm moving, I don't think I'm going to be using them.
Mm. Well, yeah, it's been fascinating talking to you. Obviously, it's a great project, and we're 100% behind it, as you know, and everybody else should know by now. We wish you all the best on the 26th of July when you set off. Having been down to Land's End, you'll be pleased to know they now have a start-finish line there. an official one that goes across the road there. So I took a picture of it, which might be on on the last podcast if people look at the website. Looking at your diary, I reckon it might be around day 10 to day 12 we may catch up with you, which will be interesting, first third. And obviously, if we can do so somewhere along the way or catch up with Peter and get an update, that would be good. And as I say, we'll catch up with you at the end. Now, last final question. It's a very interesting subject. There's a lot of things we could have talked about. But of all the things I could have asked you, what should I have asked you?
What should you have asked me? Good question. I think, possibly, whether I think my feet are going to hold up. Because it's a hell of a distance to be running each day. And one of the comments I've had from a couple of quote-unquote experienced barefoot runners is that I'll have no skin left after 3 days on the bottom of my feet. So I think what am I going to do when my feet get damaged would be a really good question.
Well, I'm sort of hoping that you've sort of got something planned for an awareness of how your feet are performing as you go along, certainly the first week.
Yeah, there is the awareness of how things are going on, but there's certain things that you can't plan for. A piece of glass hidden in some grass or some sand and stuff like that. Which is it's going to be a bit off-putting. But I do have some lovely climbing tape, and I've actually trialled it. And I do know that you can run on quite severely damaged feet without actually making the damage any worse, which is nice. But that's why I've got emergency sandals.
Right. Well, everybody listening to this, if you're in the UK, if you're anywhere on the route, do check out the blog site. Do try and join Alex, even if nothing else, for a pat on the back and drop in some water and some food. I'm sure he will greatly appreciate it. Alex, it's been great talking to you. All I can do is wish you all the very best, and I'll be absolutely fascinated to catch up with the progress and hopefully the completion.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity for the podcast, and obviously the really, really useful equipment you've sent across.
As you heard, I do hope to catch up with Alex a third of the way through, and hopefully at the end. One, to keep his spirits up, and to see how his body and feet are coping with the variations of modern day urban and rural landscape. Please consider helping him in some way. All the links can be found on the Outdoor Station website. That's the links to the blogs, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Just Giving. Of course, every penny raised is for an excellent cause, and it would be good to ensure that every step of the 1,206 miles is paid for, no matter what happens. So I do hope you've enjoyed all the podcasts and obviously the more recent podcasts. Please do take time to drop me a line with any feedback or comments. Post on the Outdoor Station website itself. And better still, if you have time, I'd love it if you would put a review on the iTunes directory. That does mean I pop up higher in the search list when people want to listen to quality digital audio for download. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.